going to be here today?
Yes. I've heard from him.
Oh, there he is. I see him. Oh, get in here. I see you over there, Tommy.
Of course I'm here today. It's Monday.
It's Monday.
Spouse is here. Hannah's here as well.
Time to get it in.
Seem to have that dive down the way I normally do.
Really high that time. It took you so long to fall.
Really high. I was so high, and then I hit the board, and then I was still screaming, and I don't remember even splashing, hitting the water. I was like the famous Atlantic City diving horses. My dad took me to see that. And even at a young, impressionable age, I knew when I saw in the look of my father's face, like, that is just not right. Not right. Do you know what the incredible diving horses of Atlantic City were, Tom?
No, I hope that they were people dressed up as animals diving into a pool rather than having the poor animals themselves do the dive.
As my dad said, there was no diving involved. It was falling. They would walk up this plank, and then they'd get to the top, and there was normally a beautiful blonde-haired woman standing on or sitting on the horse, and then all of a sudden the plank would just give way, and then the horse would fall down into this great big like tub.
So they were real horses.
Sean, you're kind of a horse expert now. Were they real?
Yeah, I'm going to say that those horses were freaking real. They're about a
mile, baby, on my mind. All right, here we go. They're back Hello. At it again. How many times have we tried to do an income tax in the state of Washington, Hannah? Is it like 8 or 9 times, I think, they've been bringing this to the court since like 1934?
Yes, it's and I don't know exactly how many times, but it's a lot of times. And then we've had to vote and lots of times. But it's been, yes. I believe, like a decade, right? I think this was 10 years ago that they tried to do this last. And there's been a lot of hype about it. Everybody knew this was a big thing on the wish list for the Democrats with their majorities in Olympia. And it was a really busy weekend in Olympia as well. So you had... really, actually, the House got the worst of it. They were there all weekend through yesterday. The Senate was just there on Saturday and got to be quite busy. So this was the capital gains tax, of course, that we're talking about, 5096 in the Senate. Democratic Senator June Robinson is the sponsor.
What this will mean is our ability to better invest in our children, in our schools, in our health care, in our roads, in our safety. Right. It means investing in opportunities for our neighbors. It means building a brighter tomorrow.
Yes.
Now, this bill before us is just one tool to move towards that future. It is not a panacea. It is not going to get us there overnight. But it is an important step forward. It will inject much-needed revenue into a flailing child care system. And... revenue into further reforming our tax code in a way that will serve all Washingtonians.
There you go. Fair tax structure.
Now, I think just to clarify, because I think John misintroduced you, this is not an income tax. This is
a
capital gains tax that is being argued against as an income tax. But that is an issue that still has to be resolved. Okay, I just wanted to get that out.
It is. Just for clarity's sake, Your Honor. For clarity's sake, Your Honor, the IRS recognizes capital gains as income. That's the federal government recognizes capital gains as income. This is an income tax.
That is a point not conceded by the sponsor.
Conceded by the internal rectum service, which recognizes, and every single 27 or 24 states in the United States that have a capital gains tax recognize it as an income tax.
That's because
they already
have an income tax. Excise
tax, which was rejected. The excise tax argument was rejected prior to Tom.
Understand?
I understand how you would like, and the Democrats would like to spin it. This is a tax on income. They're saying, no, it's an excise tax. This is the argument they make before the Supreme Court in the state
and
of Washington. Is that it's
an
right. Okay. You're going to have to try to make that argument. But it is, according to the Internal Revenue Service, it is
income.
It's going to be decided not by the IRS, I think, but by the state Supreme Court here. I just want to kind of get that out.
Okay.
So people didn't pass an income tax. They passed what they're calling a capital gains tax, which the opponents say is an income tax, and the proponents say isn't. So that issue has not yet ultimately been resolved. So moving on.
What has the court argued? What has the court argued on a capital gains is income? Correct? Because that's what this whole thing is going to come down to. Yeah.
Yes, but yes. In 1934, yeah. I think it goes that far back on the income tax. Yes, mm-hmm. But they are going to challenge that very decision back in 34. The question is income deemed the same as property or not? They ruled yes that it was, and now the argument is no that it isn't. That's okay. I'm not trying to make. I just want to sort of clarify for people that they didn't raise their hands and say we are in favor of an income tax unless you interpret it the way. Republicans
right,
do. It's not a conceded point. That's all.
Words.
Carry on.
There's another thing. Make up whatever word you want. Go ahead.
Also, you'll hear the critics call this an income tax, not just because of what you guys just described, but because they believe this is the push to test the waters to eventually get to an actual regular income tax to kind of chip away at the court there. Also, I'm going to throw in there, since we're jumping all around, one of the things that I heard that was very interesting about this is that there's this suspicion by some on the Republican side who are very, and just people who watch policy in general, that because of what we just saw with the state Supreme Court with the felony drug possession law, which it's very technical, but what they did there was create something brand new, because the court had taken that up before, and they put something in there that when the courts looked at it before, was never a thing, right? They just made something up completely new. It's all legal and stuff, but that shows that they're willing to kind of make some new law. And that's the concern that could happen again with some other bills. So,
okay.
Moving forward, right out of the gate, back to the debate on Saturday, was a big major win for opponents when this amendment from Democrat Steve Hobbs was approved.
And I actually do believe there are times when you need emergency clause. But in this case, Mr. President, this act actually does not take effect for another 2 years. And so really not an emergency. And so I urge a yes vote on this amendment.
And he got it. So I think that might have been prearranged before they even went on the floor. But it was a big deal, because if the emergency clause had stayed in, that makes it referendum proof. The voters cannot challenge it at the ballot. So that passed out of the Senate with that removed. So now that's still back on the table, that you could challenge it if it goes all the way through the legislature. Very big deal. After that was approved, that amendment, hours and hours and hours of other amendments, debate with, as you can expect, a ton of criticism from Republicans.
Anticipated revenue will get you in trouble every time.
Legislatures in Washington have been trying to impose an income tax since 1934, and the voters in the state have been rejecting it.
This is a lead-in to take away from the middle class.
You hear these vague claims that, well, it's going to fund good stuff. Well, the vagueness of this reminds me of the lottery will fund education.
The court challenged that in all probability will end up before our state Supreme Court. It will create a test case that could give the Supreme Court the opportunity to either overturn or affirm one of the most important rulings it ever made.
So, but despite a handful of defectors on the Democratic side, Democrats were united front.
It is the wealthiest of the wealthiest who will pay this tax. Yes. It is less than 1% of the people in the state.
For many years, we've known that our Washington tax code is broken. It's upside down.
Washington is rated dead last in terms of tax equity, and it's time that we change that. And this is an excellent start.
Many say we don't need new revenue because we expect a good financial forecast. But I ask, on the backs of whom? Enough is enough.
Mr. President, there are 25 yeas, 24 nays.
Having received a constitutional majority in gross substitute, Senate Bill 5096 is declared passed. The title of the bill will be the title of the act.
One vote for Democrats that voted no. Now, One more soundbite. This was the best this morning. The Seattle City Council, as it's Monday, has its normal Monday briefing. And this was the first thing out of everyone's mouths. Here you go.
Capital gains making it out of the Senate on a razor thin 25-24 vote this Saturday, March 6th, and Representative Macri's just cause eviction bill passing the House on Sunday.
I'm excited and hopeful about the potential for this critical revenue to support essential programs and services, especially services like early learning and childcare, while also being a meaningful step to correct our state's regressive tax structure.
The most prominent amendment is the emergency clause, which would make the legislation go into effect immediately upon its signature from the governor, was removed. Beyond sort of the effective date, this also more or less ensures that there will be the opportunity for opponents to gather signatures and potentially challenge the legislation at the ballot box through a referendum. So that change was made, and I think there is an anticipation that it may wind up coming up for a public vote.
But that didn't stop the celebration. Everyone is very excited. It is very much expected to pass through the House, and most of those who voted against it expect it to go to the ballot. And yes, it is expected to be challenged in court.
Yeah. And just to clarify the process, and it will be challenged in court, and once the court makes its decision, then the referendum possibility before the voters happens? Or could there be a referendum before the court even decides on this? Which it's one.
I believe the referendum comes first. The referendums can come first, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, then the court would just drop the case, or would they still take on the case?
They would put it on pause, or they may not take it up right away, but you have to give the public a chance to do the referendum, which I don't have the dates in front of me, but they'd have to do it fairly quickly. And I think the court would just take it up after that. But then, you have the referendum, and then what is that? Is the ballot title wrong? Is it, it could be a whole nother court case. So the anticipation is from the get-go, and has been before session even started, that this was going to lead to a court case. And that's what they want. Yeah. That's what the Democrats want. They want this to go to court. They know it's going to take a couple of years. They want to know the answer. Can we have this source of revenue?
They think that's a more sympathetic court than they've had in years, so they'd like to be able to have this run.
They might be right.
They might be right for the eighth or ninth time. The interesting thing is, if I were there, I would ask the two or three women, the first woman you heard, the first cut about investing. It's not investing, it's your spending. But that aside, you would say, tell me forecasted, because you forecast on these budgets, forecasted capital gains. Tell me where the forecasted capital gains comes, just hypothetically speaking, 2025, 2026. Give me your forecasted capital gains.
Can't do it. Too volatile. Answer,
they can't. They can't. And in California, it is one of the most dangerous funding sources that they have. And even the people that are in the budget that are these nerds that look at these numbers say, we cannot attach any spending on capital gains. Because as soon as we do that, as we create a line for it, we are so inconsistent with what our capital gains are that year that we always have to end up dipping into the general budget in order to support. So they have to create these sort of back roads in order to support, to invest more in schooling and to get it from capital gains. They can't. So they take it from the general fund. So what people are smart enough, unlike these elected officials, to realize that as soon as you say it's capital gains and then you draw a line to support some line budget on it, you don't have the money for it. So then what you have to do is you have to start either moving the capital gains down somehow from the, 1% that don't deserve any sort of protection, down into general funds somehow, and you start tapping into other people's money. So this is the Trojan horse, the camel's nose, in order to be able to create a more equitable taxing source in the state of Washington. I agree. It is unfair that it's sales tax. The whole thing is on sales tax and it's on property tax. I got that. And if you're poor, you really pay a greater percentage of your income. I have that. But that's the deal in the state of Washington, unless you want to change the Constitution. Right, Hannah? Doesn't they have Constitution in the state of Washington would need to be amended somehow to start taxing income?
Yes, yes. This would be seen, if you let this all play out, then the critics will tell you that that's going to be the next step. That it would have to,
And the reason we're doing that is because it is unfair, And John, if you don't like this solution, what solution would be fair? This is an effort at trying to make it a little more equitable, that the very richest of the rich among us pay a little more. And as Dave Ross has pointed out in his commentary today, it's like pittance on something that he didn't do anything to make that money except to move his mouse to a buy button in 2019, for instance.
It only
counts after it's over $250,000.
Right,
and it's not part of your retirement fund. So there's so many protections in this.
Or your family small business, which was added on Saturday,
that's right,
too.
Family small business, farm.
Gross under $10 million,
But Tom, do you not – you get my point. My point is that as soon as you say, well, we're going to start to take this money from capital gains and we're going to spend it over here on this program, kittens for mittens or more food or whatever, right? But as soon as you don't have the money there because someone didn't sell something, then what do you do? You've already decided you're going to have the – you're going to cut what? You're going to cut that quote-unquote investment, or are you going to dip it and go get the cash somewhere?
Yes. And
when you set up a line, let me just finish. When you set up a line to fund it and you don't have the money to fund it, then what do you do? Because you've already established we're going to spend $10 million. I have an idea. How about this? Since you're going to get a 7% increase from the state's revenue, the money is actually we're going to be making more money this year and next year, and more federal dollars will come in as well. I have an idea. Why don't we reduce the size of government instead of increasing the size of government?
Well, okay, that's a philosophy.
For more tax revenue, for more tax revenue, become more responsible with the dollars you're already taking. In the last 5 years, the amount of money that the state of Washington has been taking from taxpayers has increased, 30%? The budget has been going up. So rather than saying, why do we have to continue to expand, why don't we actually reduce the size of government? Is that not a viable option?
Yeah, that is basically a plank of the Republican Party. And if the Republicans had the majority in Olympia, believe me, this would not have passed. The Democrats do, because the Democrats see that government can do good for society and help this inequity. If you want to resolve the inequity, you can raise the sales tax, and all that would do was raise the inequity. If you go after capital gains, it only hits the richest of the rich. And I understand if you're one of the richest of the rich, you're going to be concerned, because that richest of the rich could become a bigger and bigger category.
We still have a soda tax and a wealth tax are on the table still. So
soda tax. To decrease obesity, but it doesn't decrease obesity. All it does is increase the obesity of the state coffers. Nothing to do
but
to
it's
reduce
a dual
the
purpose.
Size of the
it's obesity
person.
And coffers. That's the, it's
yeah.
the
no,
intent.
No, but it doesn't affect, because ultimately they sell it on the idea we're going to have a healthier society. People are just as fat, except for the money that's coming into the state of Washington.
I got it.
One
I got
quick
a,
thing
option
I want to add.
For you.
Go ahead. Right. Go
I
ahead,
got Tom. An option for you, John. I'll give you the soda tax, and you give me the capital gains tax. Are we good?
Really quickly, there was a change made in this bill. It was originally going to be the education, childcare. Half of the money went there. The other half was going to go to this tax fairness thing. Those are still getting a bunch of the money, but in the middle is $100 million that goes to the general fund.
Oh, good. All right. Why don't we reduce the size of government?
I don't have that answer.
Big government always better as far as Tom's concerned. Big government better.
It can be. No, big government can be worse. I mean, the Republican administrations at the White House have made things worse, and they've added to the size of the government. I mean, that's the irony. They're really for smaller government when the Republicans aren't in charge.
And the fact of the matter is there are severe inequities. So there is, you have to try something.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Let's drag the top down rather than bring the bottom up.
Let's do both.
How do you propose the second part?
Thanks, Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah. All right. Tracy Taylor, I can hear she's chomping at the bit. Tracy? Here we go. Oh, those mortgage rates are coming up, and if you missed the boat when they were low, there's not much you can do now. If you do want to refinance that house, it's Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Keel Mortgage, the one to call, 1-888-778-KIEL for all your mortgage needs. I was trying to find some counter-programming to why people hate Costco, Tom, because we're going to talk about Costco. Wall Street Journal did a great piece on the magic of shopping at Costco. And most of the people that complain about it, the argument seems so small and insignificant. Boxes rather than bags. The lines are too long. Only a couple of people admit to having weak will when they go in there.
And deals are too good.
Right. They are then the victims of the magic right. of Costco. Having only gone in there a couple times, Lace always goes in, and I never bothered it. And she got the member. I don't have the card. Do you have a card? See, I don't have a card, so I can't get in the front door.
Yeah, my wife does. You're right. My wife does the shopping when we go to Costco. So I think I've only been in like once or twice. I understand the appeal, and to me, and I think we've got some good audio. I love this piece. Yeah. I think it's the Wall Street Journal put together. But for me, I think the difference. The people that really love Costco are people like me who love to browse. The whole design is not to be efficient and get you in and out. The whole point is to get in and stay in, sort of like a casino where you can't find the exits. And that's the trick.
Here's the magic.
Unlike most stores, there are no aisle signs or in-store maps to help direct shoppers. Instead, aisles are simply numbered. What's more, Costco constantly moves some of its products and cycles in new products. So what gives? Why are Costco stores designed this way?
By the way, that's browsing music you hear in the background. That's what
right. And how has it helped the company grow into the retail behemoth that it is today?
Costco is a big fan of using treasure hunt retail psychology to draw you in, which is basically having items on the shelf that are at a like wow price because they're such a good discount, or they're just really interesting and they're not going to be there forever.
Aha! So you get the sense that this is a one-time deal.
The big idea behind Costco's treasure hunt strategy is that by encouraging customers to explore and ensuring that there's always a new batch of interesting deals, customers end up shopping longer and buying more products.
Today I went to Costco thinking I was just going to get a few items, but I ended up with a whole entire cart.
When you go into the store, it doesn't feel the same as the last time you were there. And so you have a sense of urgency about purchasing and also just a sense of wanting to come back, right, and check out what's going on. If it was the same every time, you might not come as often.
I'm going to add a thing known as sunk cost, which is you've been pushing the gigantic cart around for so long, you're then like, well, crap, I got to get something. It's like the when you go to a discount mall, you drive 500 miles you're from right. the nearest town, and you get out there, and you shop around for 3 hours. You're like, well, I got to... I'll get a belt. I mean, just something. Because I come here. I must kill something and bring it back. So I think that's part of it also is that once you've been in there long enough, well, I'm going to buy something.
Membership dues are something. Also how Costco makes most of its money.
I think Costco's management's main goal is always this ethos of, can we offer more exciting items at a better price to keep memberships growing? The model is make money on the membership, sell things as cheaply as possible. They can't just raise the price on something to increase the profit. That's against the internal code. And so that also includes things like, let's save money in how much time we spend putting products on shelves. So that's part of the reason why you see these pallets of goods stacked up to the ceiling is there's not a lot of time spent taking apart those pallets, putting each individual product on the shelf. If they eliminate that, there's a little bit of labor savings, there's some time savings, because they're just putting all that stuff out on a pallet and you take it.
So they do cost plus 11%. That's the way they run their business. They make the money on the membership part of it, which doesn't cost them anything, but that gets you in the door to then buy something. And I guess if you spend $55 or $70 or whatever it is, you have a commitment that you're going to go there because you've spent the money to buy the membership. So then you're going to keep going back to Costco, right, Tom?
It's fascinating that because it doesn't seem like it would take that long to unpack a pallet. But apparently, because they have so many dang pallets of so many things that they actually are saving, productivity time by not, neatly packaging them or, displaying them on a shelf. Fascinating.
I don't know how many workers they have they say the average Costco scanner person used to do 40 items or 40 customers an hour. They're now up to 50 customers an hour. That's improved. But again, if you go there on a Saturday, the lines are so long, doesn't matter how many checkers they would have, you would still have the lines. Last part of it, we're going to skip ahead to how they continue to have success during the pandemic. More from the Wall Street Journal.
Costco is certainly a model that has not only survived the pandemic, but has really thrived in the pandemic.
Despite the increased popularity of online shopping, Costco has leaned into its strategy of driving members to its stores.
It's really interesting to me because for years people have questioned Costco. You know, Amazon's going to get you. You got to get bigger online. And that really hasn't played out yet. They've said explicitly, we prefer people to come into the store and shop. We want impulse buys. We want people to come in, see what we have, and buy more. We work better that way, and it's cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if that really has held up, huh? Because so much has gone online. It's fascinating to think that Costco still feels like, yeah, online, we'll have a presence. But really, our key, the trick to our business model is to get people inside and impulse buy.
Yes. I wonder, you know, that's just, they're playing off of human nature. You get a bunch of people pushing gigantic carts around. You get enough of them, it does create sort of this frenzy of like, there must be something going on here. And also, you sort of feel it with everybody. They're all kind of looking around, and there's this, no one's just beelining it right to the, you know, the Belgium endives or something. Everyone has got this sort of grab and look at and move around, and then just play into the whole idea of that kind of hunter-gatherer. You went in to get ketchup and you walk out with a speedboat. It's crazy how that happens. Right, I went in a Daniel Steele novel and snow tires. Who knew I wanted the latest Daniel Steele novel? It is amazing also that they do provide all sorts of like eyeglass checks. They do heating and cooling and
food.
They're not into the advanced hair. They don't have the FUE roofing, treatment, though. Roofing.
No,
roofing.
They don't.
There's
next.
Roofing.
Wow.
All right.
Yep. It's very smart. And it's amazing.
Packages, cars.
And they don't raise their prices. See, the capitalistic impulse most of us would have is, this is my place is really popular. I'm going to raise, you know, just a penny or two, and that goes against their entire philosophy. They get you on the membership card.
Well, if they didn't want to be capitalist, why wouldn't they just charge 0% or 1% or give all money back in profit
back to the employees?
Well,
ultimately, they're like super smart capitalists, and they realize raising the price isn't going to work as readily as getting us memberships and keeping prices low.
Right. Okay. Well, they're working you. Do you feel manipulated by it? Do you care that you're being manipulated, Tracy?
I'm just here for the boba ice cream. That's all I'm here for.
Okay. And that's worth it.
Inside Costco reference on the what ice cream?
Boba.
Okay.
Listen, my kid got me hooked. I'm sorry. It's delicious. It's delicious.
All right, if you're coming to take over our intersections or our warehouse parking lots, Tom, you might as well go somewhere else. Who am I?
You are a Fife Council member.
Yes, that's right, Tom. Good. Who am I speaking to?
So, this is a story about drag racing, I guess, and the kind of activities that were in the news, was it a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago, where a cop was surrounded by a bunch of people who were watching a kind of a, you know, I don't know what you'd call it, let's say it's a drag race.
They're doing all sorts
of other things. But anyway, he got surrounded by it, and he ended up driving out, feeling, pressured, driving out and over, bumped a bunch of people over and drove over somebody. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of unusual because we hadn't heard these things. These things are apparently going on a lot. And now the council members in Fife are seriously considering this ordinance that I think the police chief is in favor of, which would involve impounding your car if you're caught doing all these things, performing street exhibition stunts, donuts, burnouts, drifting, or racing. And what's interesting about this regionally is the reason it's on the upswing in places like Fife and Puyallup and Sumner and other parts of Pierce County is because King County, specifically South King County, like Kent and Auburn, have already implemented these stronger penalties, including impounding. So all of these scofflaws, they're all moving down to Pierce County to do what they can't do in South King County. And there's the dilemma for Fife.
So Puyallup, Sumner, Kent, and Renton and Auburn passed laws called SOAR, Stay Out of Areas of Racing. By the way, in 2020, even just watching it is illegal. To watch participants in an illegal straight race, no racing zones. So they want to go ahead and get your car if you are caught doing it. They said they're just going to force people somewhere else to do it, so they're going to make the laws a little tougher here. I think the other thing you should do is, because these guys love their cars.
Yeah.
If you race with the car, they pull your car over and they set it on fire and you have to watch it burn. And it burns down. And anybody stand around and watch it. And then if you're watching it, get burned, then we set your car on fire. I care what car. Just a series of car fires. People love car fires. You just get one guy, and you just burn up his car.
You know, that's a lot of car fires. They say some of these things attract as many as 300 cars.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And just so, I mean, we're kind of having fun with this, but they talk about how dangerous it is for bystanders. Two women were killed in November at one of these car meetups in Auburn. So that this can have deadly consequences. Not just a bunch of teenagers and young ne'er-do-wells having a good time. Right. This can be dangerous.
This is the ruffians. People used to do this in the 50s and 60s, and they would race for pinks or race for titles. They call it, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Think about that. You're going to race the guy next to you, and if you lose, then you lose your car. Wasn't that what it was? Wasn't that what it was, like American Graffiti and all those shows? Yep. Like, oh, I got it. Yeah, hey, there's going to be racing tonight. Yeah.
Fast and the Furious. Races.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Look at Tracy Taylor with a Fast and Furious reference. She is a traffic person. Yeah. Okay. What's going on?
The movies came out when I was in high school, so you know.